police have moved out of the square.
Completely?
No, there are still a few left. They also have a guy on top of the cathedral with binoculars.
Do you think it's safe to go outside to the courtyard?
He looked over at Taylor, then back at me. I think he understood why I was asking. You're okay.
Thanks, I said. I walked over to Taylor.
Hey.
She wouldn't look at me.
Ian said we can go outside. Good, she said. Maybe Tessa would like to go for a midnight stroll.
Would you like to go outside with me?
She just sat there for a moment, then exhaled slowly. All right.
I gave her my hand and pulled her up.
Hey, where are you guys going?
Austin said.
We're not supposed to go out.
We're just going out to the courtyard, I said. Ian said it's okay.
We just need some fresh air, Taylor said.
I could use some too, Austin said.
Not now you don't, I said. I pulled the door open for Taylor and she stepped outside. I held her hand as we walked down the stairway. We sat on a bench in a corner of the courtyard. We kept our voices down. Even though no one could see us, we didn't know if anyone was close enough to hear us. Just hearing English might be enough to get tipped off.
Why are you giving me the cold shoulder?
I said.
You know why.
I had my arm around her so they'd think we were tourists.
You were pretty convincing.
Do you really doubt how I feel about you? You can read my mind.
She frowned.
It's not you, she said. I'm just insecure.
About me?
About her, Taylor said. Tessa doesn't like me.
Why would you say that?
I read her mind.
Why wouldn't she like you?
Because she wants what I have, Taylor said.
What's that?
You know what?
I looked at her. Why would you say that?
I told you. I heard her thinking.
I just looked at her.
You're making me feel like a peeping Tom, she said.
You are.
I'm not trying to be. It's just that we're in these small places, backs of trucks, hotel rooms. With Tessa around magnifying my power, I can hear everyone's thoughts without even touching them. You have no idea what's going on in there. We're a mess.
Like what? I asked.
Like Jack is completely blaming himself for Wade's death. He plans to die in Lima sinking the boat. Tessa hates Abigail and me, and Abigail is ready to call it quits.
She was ready to call it quits in Pasadena.
Well, now she's really ready.
And me? What have you read in my mind?
You feel bad because I'm being cold to you and you love me.
Maybe it's not all bad then.
I'm sorry. I just got jealous.
Why would you get jealous over me? You're way out of my league.
I don't know why you always say that, she said.
She leaned into me.
Will you please just kiss me already?
I put my arm around her, and we kissed. When we parted, she said,
For the record, it's the other way around.
What's the other way around?
You're out of my league. You're just too nice to know it.
I pulled her close. After a few minutes, she asked,
What are we going to do about everyone? They're falling apart.
I don't know, I said. I really don't know. While I was thinking, someone started shouting in Spanish. Then we heard glass break.
We'd better go back in,
I whispered. I took Taylor's hand and we climbed the stairs. Inside, everyone was sleeping, though I noticed Tessa glance up at us as we entered. I wondered how long it would be before Jaime arrived.
Chapter 26 Miraflores.
The room's blinds were glowing from the first rays of dawn, and there was a soft rap on our door, quickly followed by another. Everyone in the room woke at the sound except for Austin, who could sleep on an airport runway. I looked at Ian, who had been sleeping on a blanket on the ground but was now rubbing his eyes.
"Is it safe?"
"It's Jaime," he said groggily. "And the old man."
I got up and opened the door. Jaime's appearance shocked me. His head was wrapped in a bandage that covered one eye. Still, he smiled.
"Mr. Michael," he said.
We embraced, then I stepped back and both men entered quickly. I shut the door behind them.
"What happened to you?"
I asked Jaime.
"Our escape was not as easy as I hoped. They found us, and they shot at us. I barely escaped."
"And your friends?"
He shook his head.
"They were not as fortunate."
"I'm sorry," I said.
"Me too," he said. "I am much grieved."
He looked around the room.
"Is everyone here?"
"Not everyone," I said.
His eyebrows raised.
"You are missing someone?"
"We lost Wade. He was shot by an Elgen guard."
Jaime shook his head slowly.
"I am sorry. We have all had losses."
He walked to the center of the room.
"My friends, the police have given up their search, but the army is on their way here. They believe that you are still in Cusco. We must get you out before they arrive. I have a truck outside. We must leave immediately."
"Where are we going?"
Zeus asked.
"We will drive to Lima, where we will wait for the Elgen fleet to arrive."
Suddenly Abigail stood. "I'm not going." Everyone looked at her.
"I can't do this anymore. I never wanted to come here. We've suffered so much. Jack's been shot, and now we've lost Wade."
She breathed out heavily.
"I'm going home."
"Home?" Ian said. "You still won't be safe," I said. "You'll never make it alone."
"She's not going alone," Zeus said. "I'm going with her."
I looked at him in surprise.
"You're leaving us?"
"I'm sorry, but Abby's right. It's too much for us. Look at us. We're a bunch of teenagers. We can't stop them."
He looked around, then said in a softer voice, "We might as well make the most of the time we have left." I looked around at the group. A heavy despair had settled on the room. "Anyone else planning on leaving?" I looked at Taylor.
"Taylor?"
"You know better," she said.
She walked to my side.
"Austin?"
"Of course I'm staying."
"Tessa?"
She glanced at Taylor, then back at me.
"Sorry, I think Zeus is right."
"Jack?"
"I'm in this to the end."
"Ian?"
Ian looked the most conflicted of anyone in the room, like he was being torn in two. Abigail looked into his eyes.
"Come with us."
He looked down for a moment, then back at me.
"I'm sorry, Michael."
I exhaled slowly. Everyone looked at McKenna. She was the only one who hadn't picked a side.
"McKenna?"
Abigail said.
"It's the three of us. It's always been the three of us."
McKenna glanced at Austin, then back at Abigail.
"You're probably right, but I can't let these guys down. They saved us from the academy."
The room fell into silence. I turned to Zeus.
"Are you sure?"
"I'm sure," he said.
Ian looked at me.
"Come with us, Michael. This is too risky. You don't want any more blood on your hands."
Jack exploded.
"Wade's blood isn't on Michael's hands!"
I put my hand on Jack's arm to calm him. "It's okay, man. He didn't mean that."
"No, I didn't,"
Ian said.
Wade's blood is on the Elgen's hands, and they're not going to stop until they've taken all of our blood. The only way to win this game is to not play it. We'll go someplace the Elgen will never find us. We'll live together.
He looked at Jaime, then back at me.
It's like Zeus said, if the world's going to ruin, then we might as well enjoy it while we can.
Jack's expression turned hard.
Sometimes there are bigger things to live for than yourself.
Jack, Abigail said softly. Ian's not being selfish. He's being rational. And I don't think you're thinking about living.
Then there are things worth dying for, Jack said. We're not arguing with you, Jack, Zeus said. You've suffered as much as any of us, but that's precisely our point. Haven't you suffered enough? Why suffer any more? Because there's a chance we might be able to stop them, Jack said.
And what if you can't? Abigail said. What if they're just too big?
Jack looked down for a moment, as everyone anticipated his reply. Then he looked up, his eyes strong.
Then we'll fail in glory.
The room fell into complete silence. Then Jaime said,
You stay or you go. It is your choice. But for now, everyone must leave Cusco.
Jaime looked at the dissenters.
When we reach Lima, I will arrange for you to fly back to America.
Jaime's offer stung, not just because I was losing my friends, but because deep inside, I really wanted to go home with them.
Chapter 27 The Calm Before the Storm. Jaime had parked a meat refrigeration truck in front of the hostel, and when no one was around, he backed it up as close to the blue door as he could, so we could enter without being seen by anyone in the alley. When he gave us the signal, we took turns climbing in. I was the last to enter. Once I was inside, Jaime shut the door, leaving us in darkness. McKenna lit up just bright enough so we could see one another.
What kind of a truck is this?
Tessa asked.
It smells back here. Is that blood?
Abigail asked, looking at the floor.
It's a meat truck, Austin said.
He rubbed his face.
I feel like such a ham hock.
In spite of the tension, I laughed. The ride to Lima was long, nearly 700 miles and more than 15 hours. Jaime stopped only once to get gas and let us use the bathroom. We slept through much of the drive, as much from trying to escape anxiety as from fatigue. Less than an hour out of Cusco, a convoy of more than 50 army trucks passed us. No one spoke about the fracture of the Electro Clan, but the division was obvious. Consciously or not, we now sat in our own groups, those who were staying and those who were going. In such a confined metal room, and with Tessa present, Taylor couldn't help but read everyone's thoughts, even though she struggled not to. I didn't have to read her mind to know how angry she was at Abigail. But I wasn't. Even at the academy, Abigail had wanted to go home. I supposed that I felt as if I'd deceived her. She had stayed only because I'd convinced her that it was for her own safety, but what we'd dragged her through since then was hardly for her own safety. What we were now planning, sinking the Ampere, certainly wasn't for her safety. I couldn't blame her for leaving. I couldn't blame anyone for leaving. Like I said, I wanted to go with them. But I couldn't. Something held me. Something my mother always said. All that's required for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. We arrived in Lima at 2 a.m. We woke to the shuddering of the truck braking and shutting off, then the stringent smell of the ocean breeze as Jaime opened the back doors. I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't this.
Jaime had brought us to a beautiful tile-roofed villa that overlooked the South Pacific. The house was on 10 acres of fenced property at the end of a long private gravel road, surrounded by palm and whitewashed orange trees leading up to a large fountain. Wherever we were, we seemed to be miles from anything else, and for the first time in days, I felt safe. Jaime unlocked the villa door, and we went inside. For the first time in what seemed like an eternity, we all crashed in real beds with clean, sweet-smelling cotton sheets. I awoke the next morning, long after the sun had risen. I just lay for a while, enjoying the comfort of a real bed, then got up and walked out to the kitchen. The smell of coffee brewing filled the dining area. Taylor was already up. She was thumbing through a travel book about Peru. "Good morning," I said. She looked up and smiled. "Good morning. I'd ask how you slept, but I think I already know." She smiled again. "A real bed, with real sheets and a real pillow. I almost felt like a real human again."
"You look like a real human," I said. I walked toward her. "What are you looking at?"
"Just this book that was here. It has pictures of Peru. Did you know that there are almost 4,000 native varieties of potatoes in Peru?"
"No," I said. "But I bet Austin does."
"Of course Austin does," she said. "He's Austin." She set aside the book. "Come sit by me."
I sat down next to her on the couch.
"Have you looked outside?"
"No."
"It's beautiful. There are flowers and palm trees. It's a real Spanish villa."
She looked at me.
"It's the calm before the storm."
"I'm afraid you're right." We sat a moment in silence. Then Taylor said,
"Jaime left."
"Where?"
"He said he had some business."
"When is he coming back?"
"A few days."
"Did he say anything else?"
"There's food in the fridge, and no one should leave the property."
"House arrest again?" I asked.
"Villa arrest. But at least this time we have real beds."
"With pillows." Just then, Austin walked in.
"Morning. What's for breakfast?"
"Potatoes," Taylor said.
"Doesn't surprise me," Austin said. "There's almost 4,000 different varieties in Peru."
Chapter 28. Two Paths. In spite of our luxurious surroundings, the next 3 days passed in a dull emotional haze. There wasn't much to do. Lima had some electricity so we could watch TV, but the stations were all in Spanish. So were the books in the house. There were playing cards, and all of us except Jack played Hearts or Texas Hold'em until even that got boring. All that was left to do was to talk, and I suppose that was the thing we were all avoiding. After all we had been through, it was as if we were suddenly strangers again. Most heartbreaking to me was the tension between Abigail, Ian, and McKenna. I suppose all of them had reason to feel betrayed. The least sociable of all of us was Jack. He didn't join in cards or talk or anything. He either stayed in his room or exercised in the garage, improvising exercise equipment from things he found around the house. He stuffed a laundry bag with sheets, hung it from a pergola, then pounded it for hours like a punching bag. He also ran in place, lifted large rocks, and did like a million push-ups. We all were worried about him. I couldn't stop thinking about what Taylor had said about him not planning on surviving the attack. The evening of the second day, Taylor, Abigail, Zeus, and I were making dinner when Jack walked into the kitchen. His arm was covered with blood. Taylor gasped.
"What happened? Is that where you were shot?"
"No," he said. He held up his wound. He had cut a jagged line on his forearm below his tattoo.
What do you think?
We were all speechless. Zeus was the first to say something.
Is it a lightning bolt?
No, Jack said. It's two W's.
Two W's? Taylor said.
What does it stand for? I asked. Jack looked at me with disappointment.
Wade West.
Jaime returned the third day, shortly after sunset. The meat truck was gone, and he was driving a white passenger van. Printed on the side, next to a picture of an Incan god, were the words, Sacred Valley Inca Tours. We all went out and helped carry in boxes of groceries, which were mostly fresh vegetables and meats and sausages wrapped in paper. There was also a box of clothing. After we'd finished unloading the van, Jaime gathered us into the front room. When we were all seated, he said,
I have news. For those who are leaving, I have made arrangements for you to fly back to America in the morning.
The immediacy of the flight surprised us. Taylor gasped softly.
Where are we going?
Abigail asked.
I cannot tell you, he said, but to a safe place.
I've heard that twice before, she said. Both times we were almost killed.
I guarantee it is safe, Jaime said. It is with our own people. They would like to talk with you and see if you have any information to help the cause. Then they will make arrangements for your future.
What do you mean? Tessa asked.
Where and how you live will be your choice, Jaime said. But we know that the Elgen will not stop hunting you, so you will be given new identities, and you will have decisions to make about how much risk you will take.
Like the Witness Protection Program, Austin said.
Si, Jaime said. We will do whatever we can to protect and help you, but it will take a little time to make everything right.
He looked at each of the four who were leaving.
Do you have any questions?
When no one said anything, I raised my hand. I'd like to say something.
Si, Mr. Michael. Jaime said.
I stood, suppressing my tics.
I know that some of you might feel guilty about leaving. I just want to say, don't. You have already risked more than most people will in 10 lifetimes. You're already heroes.
To my surprise, no one looked comforted at all. If anything, they looked more miserable.
Michael is right, Jaime said. You have already risked more and done more to battle the Elgen than any of us. You may hold your heads high. One need not fight every battle or die in the struggle to be a hero.
In spite of what we'd said, everyone still looked down. After a minute, Tessa asked,
What time do we leave?
Around 10, Jaime said. Perhaps a little earlier. There is a private airstrip not far from here. You will fly to Nicaragua, where we will change planes, then fly to our base in the U.S. I have brought fresh clothes for you, so you are not so noticeable or uncomfortable. For those who are staying, we have received word that the Elgen fleet has passed through the Panama Canal. The first ships could arrive in Port Callao in just 5 days. So for now, I suggest you get as much rest as you can.
The two courses he'd just detailed highlighted the stark difference of our paths.
Can we please go into town? Taylor asked. There's a Hard Rock Cafe just a few miles away.
Jaime shook his head.
No, it is much too dangerous. In times of national crisis, foreigners are closely watched. Yesterday, the Lima police arrested 2 people they thought were Zeus and Abigail.
Zeus and Abigail exchanged glances.
They thought they were us? Zeus asked.
Yes, but they were just students. One of them from England.
Jaime looked around the room.
Any other questions?
No one spoke.
Okay, it is late. Get some rest.
We looked at one another sadly. I wanted to say my goodbyes. Actually, I wanted to throw some kind of farewell party. But in light of losing Wade, a party didn't seem appropriate. In the end, we all just went to bed. That night, I had a dream. Hatch was walking toward me, smiling. I lifted my hands to shock him, but my hands were gone.
Chapter 29. Another Farewell. I woke to the sound of talking and looked at the digital clock next to my bed. It was already 9:30. I pulled on my pants and walked out into the kitchen. Abigail, Zeus, Tessa, and Ian were sitting around the table eating omelets. They stopped talking as I walked in.
"Hey, Michael," Zeus said.
"Good morning," Abigail and Ian said simultaneously. Tessa looked at me sadly and nodded. "Michael?" They were all dressed in the new clothes Jaime had brought, which actually looked surprisingly cool. It was odd seeing them in clean clothing.
"You look so... normal," I said.
"I know, I hardly recognized myself," Abigail said. I sat down at the table and looked over at Ian's plate. His omelet had ham, onions, jack cheese, and peppers.
"That looks really good," I said.
"Tessa made them," Ian said. "I like to cook," Tessa said. "It's kind of my thing, especially omelets. I'm also good at making crepes."
"You make crepes?" I said.
"She makes incredible crepes," Ian said.
"You were holding out on me," I said.
"It's not like I could have made them in the jungle," she said. A few minutes later, Taylor and McKenna came into the room. Taylor had her arm around McKenna, whose eyes were puffy. She looked as if she'd been crying all night. Ian got up and walked over to her. "Good morning," he said. They embraced. Austin walked in.
"Something smells good."
"Omelets," Zeus said. "Tessa's specialty."
Austin looked in the kitchen.
"You didn't save any for us?"
"Sorry," she replied. "I didn't know when you were getting up."
"You thought we'd just let you leave without saying goodbye?" Austin replied.
She shrugged. "Maybe." "What time is it?" Taylor asked.
"It's almost time for us to go," Tessa said. "We're just waiting for Jaime."
Then Jack appeared in the doorway. Abigail's gaze followed him as he walked into the room. Their eyes met, but neither of them spoke.
"Here's Jaime," Ian said. "He's driving up the lane now."
A couple minutes later, Jaime opened the door.
"Vámonos, hermanos," he said. He looked around at all of us. "I will give you a few minutes to say goodbye. Then we must go."
McKenna walked over to Austin, and Taylor took my hand. For a moment, we all just looked at one another. Then Abigail walked across the kitchen to us. She stopped just a few feet in front of me.
"I guess this is it," she said. "Please don't hate me."
"Abby, when I was in cell 25, I knew I couldn't take the pain much longer before I'd break. But I didn't, because you saved me. I don't know which of us is doing the right thing. All I know for sure is that I'll never be able to repay you for what you did for me." Abigail's eyes welled up with tears. I put my arms around her, and she broke down crying.
"I'm so sorry, Michael. I wish I were strong like you. I'm sorry I'm letting you down."
I kissed her forehead. "Promise me something."
"What?"
"Promise me that you'll never regret your decision. If I were you, I would have done the same thing. And if something happens to us, it's not your fault. You couldn't have stopped it." I looked into her eyes.
"Some people weren't born to fight.
Some people were born to pick up the pieces. She fell into my arms again, and we held each other.
I'm going to miss you, she said.
I'm going to miss you too, I replied. But we'll see each other again. When we parted, Abigail's cheeks were streaked with tears. She touched my cheek, and for a moment, I could feel my pain and fear go away.
When I see you again, she said, we're going to have a big celebration.
I'm going to hold you to that, I said. Then Taylor stepped forward.
Goodbye, Abby, she said.
Her eyes were also filled with tears.
I'm sorry I've been so mean to you lately. I understand, Abigail said. I've just been so angry, or maybe I'm just afraid. But Michael's right. When Nichelle broke me, you were there to heal me. I'll never be able to repay you for that.
You freed us, Abigail said. You've repaid me 100 times over.
The two of them embraced. McKenna walked up to Abigail. They threw their arms around each other. When they parted, they were both crying.
I love you, McKenna said. I love you too, Abigail replied. You be safe. Promise me.
McKenna just smiled sadly, then the two embraced again. Then Abigail walked over to Jack. She looked up into his eyes.
Most of all, I'm sorry I'm leaving you.
You're doing the right thing, he said. You're too good for this crap. You always were.
He took a deep breath.
Where do you think you'll end up?
I don't know. Wherever they send me. How about you?
Jack shrugged.
Wherever the battle takes me.
Abigail smiled sadly.
You really are a warrior, aren't you?
We'll find out soon enough.
I already know,
Abigail said. She leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek. Then she looked intensely into his eyes, then kissed him on the mouth.
You have no idea how much I wish you were coming with me, but I know you need to do what you have to do. After you've kicked Hatch's butt, come back to me. I'll be waiting.
What about Zeus?
We're just friends, she said.
How will I find you?
The voice will know, she said.
She took his hand.
Don't forget me.
How could I forget you?
Her eyes welled up with tears, and Jack put his arms around her, and she cried for several minutes. Then she took a deep breath and leaned back.
I need to say one more thing, but it's kind of hard. I just want you to take it the right way.
Jack stared into her eyes.
Go ahead.
I know that losing Wade was the worst thing that's ever happened to you. I also know that no matter what I say, you're still going to blame it on yourself. I'm just saying, don't go into battle trying to punish yourself. Promise me you won't be careless with your life.
Abigail took his hand.
If you have to be a hero, then be a hero. But don't be a martyr. Please, promise me.
Jack took a deep breath. After a moment, he said,
I promise.
A tear ran down her cheek.
Thank you.
She kissed him again, then stepped away. Zeus walked up to Jack.
You take care, man, and punch Hatch for me.
I'll do it, Jack said. You take care of Abby. Keep her safe. And yourself.
Zeus nodded.
Will do, man.
For a moment, they both were silent. Then Zeus said,
You know, I owe you. You taught me what it means to be brave.
No, man, Jack said. When you blew the water pipes, you taught me.
Jack put out his hand. Zeus looked at him for a moment, then a sad smile crossed his face.
Sorry, but a handshake won't do.
The two of them embraced.
When you sink that ship, Zeus said, make sure Hatch is on it.
Jack nodded.
I'll do my best.
Michael, Tessa said as she walked up to me. Thanks for everything.
Thank you.
I know things got a little awkward back here, but I'm really grateful for the time we spent together.
Me too, I said.
Thanks for helping me save my friends.
Thanks for making me do the right thing, she said. I'm glad I did.
Outside, the van's horn honked and Tessa sighed.
I guess it's time.
She leaned forward and kissed me on the cheek. Then she looked at Taylor.
Good luck, Taylor.
Thanks,
Taylor said.
Take care of each other.
Tessa looked at me once more, then walked away. All of us walked outside to the idling van. Abby, Zeus, and Tessa climbed inside. Ian stopped and looked at McKenna. There were tears in both their eyes. Then McKenna ran up to him and they embraced.
I love you, she said.
I love you too, Ian said. More than I can say.
When they finally separated, Ian said, You stay safe. Promise me. I don't want to hear any bad news. Not about you.
I couldn't take that.
I'll do my best.
Keep her safe, he said to Austin. She's your responsibility now.
I'll do everything I can, Austin said.
Ian turned to me.
Yo, Michael.
I walked up to him, and we clasped hands.
Listen, he said. Just sink the ship, then get out of there.
That's the plan, I said. We embraced.
You've been a good friend.
I feel guilty leaving you here. I know you could use my help.
We'll manage, I said.
He looked at me, then nodded.
If anyone can, it's you. You're the bravest kid I've ever met.
He exhaled.
Better go.
He climbed into the van.
See ya.
Ciao,
Taylor said. McKenna blew him a kiss. He smiled sadly, then shut the door.
I'll be back later tonight, Jaime said to me.
Travel safe, I said.
Vayan con Dios,
Austin said. Then the van sped away, leaving the five of us alone.
Chapter 30 Mind Reading.
Taylor and I held hands as we watched them go. Even though I'd never admit it to the others, a part of me felt like I was watching my hopes drive away with them. We were already the underdogs, and now we'd lost half our team. I don't think I had felt that discouraged since Cell 25.
We better go back inside, Jack said, before someone sees us.
We all followed him into the house. McKenna was sobbing, and Austin was doing his awkward best to comfort her. I wasn't doing a whole lot better than she was. I was twitching like crazy. When we were inside, Taylor turned to me.
Are you okay?
Just my Tourette's, I said. Tourette's or not, she said.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong about what?
What you were just thinking?
Quit reading my mind, I said angrily, wondering what she had read. It's like reading someone's journal without their permission.
I can't always help it, she said, especially when you're thinking about me.
What was I thinking? I asked.
That you should have made me go with them.
So? I said. Is it wrong to think I don't want your blood on my hands?
My blood on your hands? She replied. What about your blood on my hands? I'm a big girl. I can make up my own mind. This battle is as much mine as yours. Who do you think led the Electro Clan when you weren't around?
I'm not saying that you're not capable,
I said. But if something happened to you... And what if something happens to you? Am I supposed to just deal with that? Do you think you're the only one who's afraid of losing someone they love?
I didn't say that, I said, then added, or think that.
No, but you were going to.
Great. Now you know what I'm going to think?
She looked at me for a moment. Then she grinned. Sorry.
She put her arms around me.
I can't lose you either. So we'll just stay close. That way if something happens to one of us, it will happen to both of us.
That doesn't sound hopeful, I said.
Nothing sounds hopeful right now, she replied.
Austin walked up to us.
I'm going to make some breakfast. Anyone hungry?
I am, Taylor said.
Me too, I said. What are you making?
Omelets, Austin said. Tessa left all the stuff out to make them.
Sounds good to me, I said.
What about McKenna? Taylor asked.
She says she's not hungry, Austin replied.
You better ask Jack if he wants something, I said. As if on cue, Jack walked into the kitchen. He got a tall glass out of the cupboard, then walked over to the refrigerator, broke a half dozen eggs into a glass, then swallowed them raw. He wiped his mouth with his arm, then walked back out to the garage.
I think he just had breakfast, Taylor said.
After breakfast, Austin went to find McKenna, while Taylor and I cleaned up the kitchen. We were drying the last of the dishes when Taylor put her hand on my cheek.
You need to get some rest. You still look like you haven't slept for days.
I just can't get enough rest, I said.
Come here.
She took my hand and led me to one of the vacant bedrooms.
Lie on your stomach, she said, pointing to the bed.
I stretched out over the bed, and Taylor lay on her side next to me. She lifted my shirt, then ran her fingernails along my back and up my neck into my hair, just like my mother used to do when I was little. It was the best feeling in the world. Unfortunately, it didn't take long for me to fall asleep. Chapter 31. Sinking the Ampere. Jaime returned as the sun was setting, a huge red ball sinking slowly into the indigo blue ocean. I was woken by the sound of his car door slamming. I sat up and looked around the dark room, then at the clock. Had I really slept more than 6 hours? The house was quiet, and with the exception of Taylor's breathing, I couldn't hear a thing. I quietly got up and walked out to the front room. I turned the lights on in the hallway, then the front room. Jaime had opened the door and was carrying in several boxes.
I brought some more food, he said.
Is there anything else in the car?
Si.
I walked out to the van and grabbed several large packages of bottled water and brought them back in, while Jaime made a second trip, bringing in the rest of the food. I put the water in the refrigerator as Jaime put away the rest of the groceries.
Where is everyone? He asked.
I'm not sure, I said. I think they're sleeping.
They went to bed early, he said.
I didn't tell him that we had gone to bed shortly after he'd left. Did their flight take off okay? He nodded.
Si.
He glanced at his wristwatch.
They should almost be to Nicaragua by now.
As much as I hated seeing them go, I was happy to hear they were out of Peru. At least they're safe, I said.
For now, he said gravely. For now.
He patted me on the shoulder.
If you think your friends will wake up, I am going to make some dinner. Seco de cordero.
What's that?
It's a Peruvian specialty. Lamb stew with potatoes. The lamb is cooked in beer until it is tender, then seasoned with ají peppers and cilantro.
That sounds good, I said. Do you need any help?
Si, gracias. You can peel the potatoes.
While we were preparing dinner, I turned to Jaime.
I still haven't spoken to my mother.
We have not had a time to arrange it. I will do my best to contact the voice tonight.
When we were ready to eat, I went back to the room and gently woke Taylor. She was as disoriented as I had been.
What time is it?
She asked, pulling her hair back from her face. It's time for dinner, I said. She squinted at me.
Dinner? How long did I sleep?
Most of the day. She pushed herself up.
Where's everyone else?
I'm not sure, I said. We need to get them. We searched the house. We found Jack in the garage, working out. He was drenched in sweat, and his muscles were pumped, his biceps bulging like grapefruits. His knuckles were red from pounding his homemade punching bag. Time to eat, I said.
I'll be right there,
he said. We found Austin and McKenna in McKenna's room. Austin was holding McKenna while she slept, and he put his finger over his lips to silence me.
Dinner time,
I whispered. He just waved me off.
I'm not hungry.
As we walked out, I turned to Taylor. Did he really just say that?
Wow,
she said. That's the power of love. We laughed the whole way to the kitchen. The stew was delicious and easily the best meal we'd had since coming to Peru. Halfway through dinner, Austin and McKenna joined us. I'm glad they did. It had been a traumatic day, and it was good to come together. Jack was quiet during the meal, and Taylor tried to engage him.
How long have you been working out?
All day, he replied.
Aren't you tired?
He looked at her as if the question hadn't crossed his mind, or, more likely, was irrelevant.
I'm preparing.
That is good, Jaime said. We must prepare. There is much to do before the Elgin fleet arrives. Tonight, I am picking someone up from the airport. We will be here in the morning.
Who are you picking up?
Someone who can help us, he said.
Help us do what?
Taylor asked.
He looked at us seriously. Sink the Empire.
Chapter 32 Waffles and Dodds.
I couldn't believe we were eating real waffles. While we were doing the dishes the day before, Taylor had discovered a waffle iron, and we were all pretty excited about making waffles for breakfast. We didn't have any pancake syrup, but Austin knew a trick for making it with brown sugar and vanilla, and it tasted pretty much like the real thing. With fresh butter, they tasted almost as good as my mother used to make. Or maybe it had just been so long since I'd eaten anything like that, it just seemed that way. Jaime arrived as we were cleaning up. He unlocked the door and walked in.
"We are here!" he shouted.
We walked out to see who Jaime had brought home. Standing next to him was a man we'd never seen before. He was tall, at least 6 inches taller than Jaime, though just as thin. He had messy flaxen hair, a thin face, and a long, beak-like nose, on which rested round, wire-rimmed glasses. We all looked at him curiously.
"This is Mr. Dodds," Jaime said. "Mr. Dodds is a naval specialist. And a member of the Resistance."
"Hello," he said. "You may call me Bob."
He had an accent that sounded almost British, but not quite.
"Or Mr. Dodds."
"Are you South African?" Austin asked.
"You are very astute," he replied. "You must be Austin."
Austin looked impressed.
"Yes, sir."
"May I say I have very much looked forward to meeting all of you. Like so many others, I have followed your adventures, and I am most impressed with your courage and cleverness."
"It's just survival," I said.
"Well, I hope to be of service to you," he said, "and help you survive even longer. I've been asked to brief you on the Elgen fleet and help you in your task to sink the Empire."
"Let us talk in the dining room," Jaime said.
"Have you had breakfast?"
Taylor asked.
We made waffles.
Ah, waffles. Unfortunately, we had breakfast at the hotel, he said. But thank you very much. May I use this table over here? He pointed to the kitchen table.
We need to wipe it off, Taylor said. It's sticky.
I picked up the few plates left on the table, then Taylor ran a damp cloth over it. Dodds set his briefcase on the table, then opened it. He took out several folded blueprints and laid them out until they covered the table's surface. We all gathered around the table. To understand the composition of the Elgin fleet, you must first understand why they even have one. The crimes the Elgin have committed are serious enough to land the entire board in prison for the rest of their lives. They are guilty of money laundering, conspiracy, bribery, fraud, securities fraud, tax evasion, extortion, espionage, and though still unproven, mass murder. About 4 years ago, when the FBI began looking into the Elgin's criminal activities, Chairman Skimmer purchased a sizable yacht and moved the Elgin operations to international waters. Their first ship was an older model yacht they renamed the Edison. Now in international waters and belonging to no nation, the Elgin have become a nation unto themselves. They manage their corporation from the ship and move their money through offshore banks in Switzerland, Bermuda, and Cyprus. As the Elgin grew, they sold the Edison and moved to a custom-designed boat called the Ampere. The Ampere is a state-of-the-art luxury superyacht. Think of it as a floating Waldorf hotel with surface-to-air missiles.
McKenna has been on it, Taylor said.
She nodded.
It's pretty amazing.
For $500 million, it should be, Dodd said. If you have something to add, or if I say anything that you have found inaccurate, please feel free to contribute.
McKenna nodded. Yes, sir.
Dodds continued. The Ampere is the first of many ships the Elgin have since acquired. Today, the Elgin fleet consists of 7 ships, each named after a famous scientist of electricity. If the Elgin were a country, the Ampere would be their capital. It is the throne from which Admiral Hatch runs his kingdom.
Admiral Hatch? Austin said.
That is what he now calls himself, Dodd said. Actually, his full title is Supreme Commander General Admiral Hatch. He shook his head. I'm going to give you a rundown of the complete fleet. He handed each of us a piece of paper with pictures of 7 boats. This is a list of the Elgin boats. You are to memorize it, then destroy it. I looked at the sheet. It had a picture of each boat accompanied with technical jargon. The first boat on your sheet is the Ampere. We'll discuss it in greater detail a bit later. The second boat is the Faraday. It is a 20,000-ton refurbished World War II troop ship and, accordingly, is used to transport Elgin guards. It can carry in excess of 3,500 passengers. Boat 3 is the Watt, the most powerful of the Elgin fleet. The Watt is a fully operational battle cruiser. Think of it as the fleet's bodyguard. It is a highly lethal ship, with technology only the most advanced navies carry, including tactical Tomahawk cruise missiles, torpedoes, long-range cannons, and advanced targeting systems. A few years ago, while the Ampere was sailing from the Formosa Strait to the Mediterranean, they passed through the pirate-infested waters of Somalia. As happens too often these days, Somalian pirates tried to capture the Ampere, which, frankly, had they succeeded, would have been a blessing to the world. The Watt blew the pirate ship out of the water more than a mile out, then hunted down its survivors and gunned them down in the waters. The Watt is captained by Viktor Chirkev, a former rear admiral in the Russian Navy. He is a skilled captain and known to shoot first and ask questions later. Boat 4 is the Volta, the Elgin's science ship. It is where Elgin experiments are conducted. It is also where, we believe, the original MEI is being carried.
Boat 5, the Jewel, is the most secretive of the fleet. We do not know much about it, except that it is the fastest of the fleet, and, if necessary, can submerge. We believe that it's a floating bank vault, and where the Elgin keep billions of dollars of gold bullion, foreign currencies and diamonds, which would explain why the Jewel is almost always in close proximity to the Watt. Boat 6 is the Ohm. The Ohm is a supply ship, and will be the most active during the docking in Port Callao. A floating commissary, if you will. Boat 7 is the Tesla. The Tesla is a tender, a small landing craft, used for getting troops from the Faraday. As the waters surrounding Tuvalu are too shallow to dock the Faraday, the Tesla will be transporting guards to the shore for the attack. The Tesla can carry 70 guards and crew at a time. Even though it is primarily a transport, it is still armed and dangerous. It is equipped with twin 50-caliber machine guns and a 20mm Oerlikon cannon. And, of course, the soldiers' weaponry. He looked us over. That's the Elgen fleet.
It's a freaking navy, Austin said.
Fortunately, we don't have to sink the whole navy. Just the Ampere, Dodd said. You cut off the serpent's head, the rest of the serpent dies. He looked out over the table. These are blueprints from the ship, Dodd said. The Ampere is custom designed with a gross weight of 11,000 tons, with a displacement configuration. The ship is powered by a triple-screw diesel-electric propulsion system with four marine diesel engines. It has a maximum speed of 25 knots and a cruising speed of 22. I understood only about half of what Dodd was talking about, but Austin nodded with interest. How do you know all of this? I asked. Dodds looked at me.
You should know, Michael. You brought us this information.
When did I...
I stopped.
Grace, I said. Grace was one of the electric children we had freed from the academy. She had the ability to download information from computers, and she'd taken just about everything from the academy before we got her out.
Dodds nodded.
She has been a veritable gold mine. We just keep extracting more and more valuable information. So, back to our target. The Ampere is 145 meters long, and the hull is constructed of steel built over an aluminum superstructure with Kevlar insulation. It has an advanced buoyancy system that will keep it afloat even after a hull breach. It is one tough ship.
How do we sink it? I asked.
We don't, Dodd said. We blow it up. The engine room is on the first level here, he said, touching the blueprint. The Ampere's fuel tanks hold more than 250,000 gallons of diesel fuel. With enough explosives in the engine room, we can set off the tanks. If you blow 250,000 gallons of fuel, you'll blow the entire ship to pieces.
We all looked at each other.
How do we get the bomb on the boat? I asked.
There's the rub, Dodd said. There will be guards all along the shore, and the gangplank will be highly guarded day and night.
We could disguise ourselves as Elgen guards and walk on, Jack said, looking at me.
It wouldn't work, Dodd said. They are checking everyone who comes on the boat with metal detectors and fingerprint identification. Even if you got on, you'd never carry the explosive past them.
If they're loading up with supplies, Taylor said, we could sneak into some of the supply boxes and have them carry us on.
Clever, Dodd said, but they're prepared for that too.
Their security is like the one you'll find at an airport, except much more advanced. Everything that enters the ship must pass through a type of backscatter X-ray machine. Remember, these guys developed the MEI. They know how to scan.
Jack leaned forward.
We could take a small raft to the back of the boat and throw a grappling hook, he said, and climb up.
The deck is more than 100 feet up, Dodd said.
you would have to shoot it up, which means you would need a grapple gun